Well, at the beginning of this year, my parents were celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary. And our family, my extended family, decided that we would go on a holiday together to celebrate, which was awesome. And we were staying at a resort, and every morning there was a breakfast provided, and we had to be quite strategic about reserving our sun lounges for the day. Does anyone know what I'm talking about here? Okay. So we would come down before breakfast and put magazines, sunscreen or whatever, and reserve the lounges that we wanted in a good position and just sit close by having breakfast where we could observe that. Now, if you know me, I don't really buy any magazines. But when I go on a holiday, usually probably about this time once a year or whatever, I will allow myself to buy a couple of magazines. It's like a personal treat for me. And I'd bought a couple and took them away with us, and I was so excited just to flick through all the absolute celebrity trash and the fashion, I'll own it, and watch it. And so I was really looking forward to a day at the pool, flicking through my magazine. But what happened next was quite a shock to us. So there was another family nearby us, and they had quite a lot of children, really cute little kids, and the family were kind of not really paying attention to what their children were doing. We've all done that, potentially. And unbeknownst to their parents, their little preschooler children had gone over to the sun lounge where I had my magazines. They got my magazines and they went over to the pool and threw them into the pool. My son went over quite shocked, retrieved the soggy, dripping magazines and came over to our table where we'd seen what had happened, and we were all honestly quite shocked that a kid would go and do this. Even a really little kid generally knows not to go throwing other people's possessions into the pool. So Craig decided to have a gentle word with the father of the other family. So we went over and just explained what had happened. The parents hadn't had no idea what had taken place. And the dad offered to pay for the magazines, and Craig said, no, don't worry about it. But what happened next, we felt, told the real story. At no point did the father admonish his sons for what had taken place. At no point did he call them over to clarify what had happened or to apologize for what the children had done at that moment. Collectively around our table, we kind of had a moment and we wondered what and how these children may then grow up if they were never going to be pulled into line from an early age. Some of you could think I'm being really judgy. I'm happy for that. We don't know exactly what did happen later. But this story, we hear this resonated in the Bible with this gentleman called Eli. This same kind of scenario took place with Eli. I remember reading this passage a few years ago, and I wrote it down and filed it away because I thought, man, what this father didn't do really, really mattered in the long run. Now, some of you, oh, there's a picture of the pool, just to make you a little bit jealous. So when you heard the name of this message, parenting, what you don't do matters, I wonder how you felt. I ran the title of this by a friend of mine who's a preacher, and we often just bounce ideas from each other. And she says, when I hear that, I feel condemned and I feel guilty because I am really trying hard and trying to do everything right. And I feel like you're setting me up to fail or feel guilty. I just want to say that that isn't our intention here today at all. And I want to just clarify that from the beginning. I think parents have enough guilt heaped on them all the time, and we don't want that to be the case. However, what I do want to be the case is that you would be open in your heart and in your mind to how Jesus wants to continue to transform you into being a better parent. Maybe you might be challenged by something today. Maybe you need to change something. Be open to that today. And of course, others as you are thinking, well, I'm not a parent. It's not relevant. Or my kids are grown up. Or I'm 14, 15, 16, and I'm not a parent at the moment. Many of you who are younger, you probably will grow up to be parents. And some of these ideas can get filed away at the back of your mind, preparing you for a role that God has for you in your future. So take what you can and ask God to teach you from what we'd say today. I also want to be really upfront and put a disclaimer in and say, at no point here am I ever claiming to be a parenting expert. That's right, it's true. Craig and I have four teenagers at the moment, and we are totally in the trenches trying to figure this out, second-guessing ourselves often, wondering if we're making the right calls all the time. So I found this a very challenging message personally to prepare. Well, it's good for us to understand this passage a little more clearly, okay? So we have this guy called Eli. Okay, so if you've got your Bibles there and you kind of want to flick along, it's probably have a look at 1 Samuel chapter 2 and chapter 3. Anyway, Eli was a high priest. So he's sort of in charge of all the worship that was taking place in the Israelite community. He was the head honcho, if you like. And he was meant to be, you know, a really good role model to the people. And if you read back at 1 Samuel chapter 1, we actually learn that Eli was actually a really godly man, and he was very kind and generally well thought of by the people. But he had one problem. When it came to his sons, whose names were Hophni, and Phinehas. Say Phinehas. Phinehas. So we have Hophni and Phinehas. And when it came to Hophni and Phinehas, he had a blind spot. A blind spot over his sons. Let's just pause on blind spots for a second. Blind spots in other parents are really easy to spot. My child would never do that. It's your child that's the problem. My child should have received that award. Well, my child should have been the main role in the school play, the school dance, should have been the captain of the team, the musical, whatever. My child wouldn't behave that way in class. It's the teacher's fault. Any teachers here that have heard that before? Because many parents are very unwilling to take a look at themselves and their blind spots. Because sometimes it means unraveling some rubbish in our lives that are causing us to act a particular way. Well, I want to be really upfront and tell you that I was confronted by my blind spots about 13 years ago. And I had a child that was quite good at public speaking and gone on to represent the school at a zone car district carnival of public speaking. Anyway, she gave her speech. It was fantastic. It was wonderful. And everyone else gave the speeches and they were announcing, you know, who got the places. She didn't get third. I thought, oh, she's got second or first. She didn't get second. And I thought, she's got first place, of course. They announced first place. It wasn't my daughter. I was honestly shocked for a minute. And then, thank goodness, I really believe it was God's sort of spirit in me saying, Donna, you are not objective. When it comes to your own children, you can't always be objective. You can't think that they're always going to be the best. Why should your children be any better than anybody else's? Why would I think that? It was a blind spot in me, and I haven't mastered it, but I'm trying, continually trying to put that in place in my life. Because every parent wants to champion and cheer on their kids, don't we? Absolutely. We want our kids to do their best. But we've got to be careful that we don't have blind spots when it comes to them. Anyway, back to Eli. So Eli and his sons, what were his sons' names again? Hophni and Phinehas. Well done. Well, they also had a privileged role in the community. So they were part of the Levite tribe, and the priestly roles was like passed down through the family. So they got the role not because they were necessarily godly men like their dad, but because they were his sons. It's not really right, is it? But it was how... Oh, just spilled my drink. Sorry, everyone. So that wasn't great, really. And sorry, let me just find where I'm up to. So his sons had this prestigious role in the community, and they were meant to have devoted their life to the whole, you know, community and meant to be role models, however. But the Bible is really scathing in its description of Eli's sons. It says to them, the version that was read out said that they were scoundrels. This one says that they were wicked, wicked men in the sight of God, with no regard for the Lord. That's not how I ever want my son to be described. And this is written in the Bible forever, okay? So what was so wicked about what they were doing? So I'll just quickly give you a 25 words or less crash course here in Israelite worship. So today, we get to live in the time post-Jesus. So when we do things wrong, we know that Jesus is there and he lives in us, and we can say, please forgive me for what I've done wrong. I repent. My sins are forgiven. Back then, you had to make atonements for your sins. You had to present animal sacrifices to atone for what you'd done wrong. And this process was overseen by the priests. And so they would supervise the animals being sacrificed and all this sort of thing. Now, as Hophni and Phinehas were the priests, they had access to this sort of sacred area. And it says that they would fatten themselves on the choice parts of every offering. So they were allowed to take some of these sacrifices, because Levites and those in the priestly role, they actually weren't paid an income. They were sort of supported by the community. So they were allowed to take some. But they just didn't want their proper portion. They wanted the best parts of the sacrifice, and they wanted a lot of them. They wanted to gorge themselves silly to the point where they were fattening themselves on these sacrifices. And then they would often, when it wasn't even their turn to observe this, they would send a servant in to the other priest who was supervising it to get more food for them. And then if the servant wasn't really willing to do it, they would threaten them with violence. So they were scoundrels. They were wicked men, weren't they? But then on top of this, they also indulged in rampant sexual sin, and they slept with the women who served at the entrance to the tent of meeting. Now, the women who served here, they weren't prostitutes. They were women who were assisting in the whole worship process. So this wasn't great, was it? Not great at all. Now, some commentators would actually suggest that these men, Hophni and Phinehas, had actually been seducing the women and taking advantage of them. We don't know that for sure, but what we do know is that their character was not good. So it probably wouldn't surprise us if they were doing this. Basically, they acted like spoiled, greedy brats who were happy to steal from the people, who were happy to rob from God, who were happy to threaten people with violence, and had little regard for women. Not great at all. And this is where Eli, he comes unstuck as a parent. He has blind spots in his eyes. Because he knows fully well the activities that his sons are engaging in, and he chooses to do nothing. This passive parenting from Eli would go on to have huge consequences. It not only hurt his immediate family, but cause untold damage to the community and the nation, and eventually they were killed at war. We can learn much from Eli's parenting and about how what we don't do as parents really, really matters. Well, firstly, with Eli's parenting, there was truly a failure to discipline. Now, as I said, Eli knew what his sons were up to. The Bible said that he had heard everything from all the people. Now, I don't know about you, but I wish I was a parent who had heard everything. Or maybe not. It's no secret what had been going on. In fact, everyone was talking about it. They were literally fraternizing with these women in front of people and trying to take these animal sacrifices knowingly. It was no secret. I mean, in defense of Eli, he did then give a verbal rebuke to his children, as you see up there. It says about the report that he hears spreading, and he says to them, you know, this isn't really good. I'm not really happy about it. But this is where it stopped, literally at just a verbal rebuke. He didn't follow through with any consequences. He did not pull his sons into line. And frankly, these boys had absolutely no business continuing on being priests. How hypocritical would it have looked? People aren't stupid. By the time Eli had warned perhaps his sons about the behavior, it was too late. The pattern of disobedience had probably been set since the time they were little. And perhaps like the people near us at breakfast that morning, maybe the little boys were really cute. Maybe they were headstrong. And it was fun to laugh at their antics and their ways, thinking they'll grow out of it. But in time, this clearly hadn't happened. These boys hadn't suddenly turned bad overnight. They were clearly unmoved by their father's warnings and they chose to completely disregard him. The way Eli behaved as a parent, it actually really angered God. And God had something to say about it, as you can see there. I think God was most angry because he knew that Eli knew about the sin of his sons and he failed to restrain them. Wondering, parents here today, what do you know about but you don't want to deal with? Is there something you're turning a blind eye to because it's just too hard to go there? Maybe it's the start of a character flaw you can see in your child. Because disciplining, it can be absolutely exhausting. From trying to have a toddler sit in time out, how challenging that can be, to then trying to put screen time limits and consequences, to perhaps grounding, to taking away pocket money, to reining times that they need to be in at night, all sorts of things with the car. The whole gamut of parenting can be really, really challenging. But if you don't, the consequences were going to play out negatively throughout the rest of their life. You know, there's a time recently, Craig and I have had a pretty rough year of parenting, if I'm being honest. And I appreciate my children often listening and hear this, and I can't go into details, but we've just had a bit of a rough year. And there was a time recently when I said to Craig, I think I'm done. I really am feeling like giving up at the moment. I understood what it meant to reach that point where you were just thinking, this is just too hard. I'm out. You guys just sort yourselves out for the rest of your life. I've tried. Of course, I haven't given up. Love my kids too much. But if you are going to choose to be a parent that disciplines your children, you are going to have really tough conversations with them. You're going to have to give more than a verbal rebuke, naughty boy, naughty girl, or whatever you want to say. Not you should say naughty anymore. You should say what you did was naughty. You got to get it right. You're going to have to put consequences in place and then follow through with them. How hard is the follow through sometimes? It's a shocker. And to do that, you're going to have to find time to do it, and you're going to have to get energy to do this really well. Frankly, it's hard work, and they are not going to appreciate it. In fact, they're going to push back and make it even more difficult to do. It will not be welcomed at all. But parents, there's a bigger picture. You're not to be your children's best friend. You are meant to be their parent. And a parent disciplines their children. It's godly and it's biblical. And we see in this story what happened when Eli didn't do that. So don't be like Eli and fail to discipline your children. Secondly, with Eli, there was a failure in his life to put God at number one. And God makes a really harsh accusation here against Eli. He actually says to him, "Why do you honor your sons more than me?" In other words, God saw that Eli, sort of on the rank system, some of you here were a couple of weeks ago, Craig had a ladder, and the sons were right up there before God. Because he knew what his sons were doing, but he chose to ignore that. You know, we're always going to encounter problems when we don't put God as number one in our life. God gave the Ten Commandments to his people so he could explain to them how he wanted us to live. And the first one there is that, well, actually, you shall have no other gods before me. In fact, I am to come first. I am to have the first place in your life. Because when we don't do that, everything then kind of gets out of order and our priorities get all mixed up. Your kids aren't to come before me. Your husband, your wife is not to come before me. Your job isn't to come before me. Your sport, your money, whatever it is not to come before me. Because maybe, just maybe, the best thing for our children is to have parents who put God first. What if being fully surrendered to God would make us the best parents that we could be? What our kids need most are godly parents who follow Jesus with all of their heart and live to reflect that throughout their lives. Because when we love our kids more than God, we're setting our family up to fail. So don't be like Eli. Fail to put God first. And thirdly, with Eli's parenting, there was a failure to disciple. This is different to discipline. A failure to disciple. Now, remember the sons' names? It was Hophni and Phinehas. Very good. Well, we know that they absolutely had no respect for God and his ways. And they weren't afraid from robbing from God. We knew their list of things that they were doing wrong. And Eli, he might have been the high priest. He might have been, you know, sort of the senior person in the worship process of the Israelites. But somewhere along the line, something didn't quite go to plan here. Because very clearly in Jewish law at the time, it was spelled out how parents were to train their children and to disciple them, we would call this today. It told them that they were to impress the commandments of loving the Lord their God with all their heart, soul, mind on their children. Talk about it when you sit at home, when you go along the road. You can see it all there. And Eli would have known this scripture by memory. Every Jewish man would have known this off by heart. And today we would call this process discipleship. And the word discipleship comes from being one of Jesus' disciples. So at the end of the day, parents, teaching your children how to be a disciple is first and foremost your job. Sometimes parents think, I'll send my kids to a Christian school and they'll teach them all about religion there. The first and foremost job of a parent is to disciple your children, to teach them about Jesus. It's not up to North Youth. It's not up to NBC Kids. It's not up to the grandparents. It's up to the parents. first and foremost. Church and school absolutely can partner with families. It's wonderful when that happens, that it actually makes you a better parent, but you cannot rely on that at all. How are you going at discipling your children? The greatest way a parent can do this is to model it themselves, to live it out in every single way, to show to your children what it means to follow Jesus in the good times and the bad times. When things are going great, teach them to praise and to thank God and be grateful. When things aren't going so good, teach them to have faith, to trust in God, to seek Him out. Teach them to read the Bible. When they're little, read with them. Teach them how to pray. When they're older, help them learn to do this for themselves. Practice forgiveness. Show them what it means to be part of a church family. Embrace people into their life. If you are concerned about who your children are hanging around with, because at various stages, every parent goes through this at one point or another, do your best to surround your family with good, godly, positive influences. They get enough of that elsewhere. Control what you can at least control. Bring them into your home, invite them into your children's life, and obviously here at church, we have a plethora of wonderful, godly influences that can be part of your family. God wants us to take seriously our role as being disciples of our children. And this is when we walk in His ways and model that as well. So don't be like Eli and fail to disciple your children. Some of you here perhaps think I'm being a bit harsh on Eli. And you're perhaps agreeing with some of my points, but that last one's really challenging because you have done your best to disciple your children and they are not following God's ways. And that is really, really difficult. You're grieved perhaps and you're hurting at this point in your life. And the decisions perhaps that they're making are literally nothing short of heartbreaking. I think the takeaway for us all, and this is, as I said, this is nothing to do about guilt. This is about trying to encourage each other, build each other up, teach us what the Bible wants us to know. The takeaway here is that we do our absolute best to do what we can while we can, okay? We do our absolute best to do what we can while we can. Because at the end of the day, children have their own mind, don't they? We all have our own mind. And ultimately, they will decide and make decisions for themselves, whether you like it or not. And every problem that your child might encounter isn't related to your parenting. There are plenty of other factors that come in to shape who they can become as well. So do what you can while you can. I just want to acknowledge all the grandparents here in this room. Wow, what an awesome job you also have. It's a little bit hard to discipline perhaps grown-up children, isn't it? Once they become young adults, that's really difficult to put into place. Not even young adults, when they're grown up and they have families of their own, you can't really take that discipline role anymore. But you can still show them what it means to put Jesus as number one. And you can also still disciple your family. I don't care how old you are. You can be a discipler. Parenting, I reckon, is seriously almost the hardest job in the world. But what an awesome God we have. He wants to give us the strength, the courage, the hope, the perseverance, and the faithfulness that we can keep doing this again and again, even when we feel like we want to give up. So I said, our church's vision is that people would find hope and freedom and transformation through Jesus. And I know that I want Jesus to continue to transform my parenting. I feel like I've still got so far to go. And I want to see God continue to do something new in my parenting here. And I also just want to say that I reckon we've got some of the best parents I've ever known in this church. I am learning so much from all of you. I am watching how you're disciplining your children. I'm watching how you're discipling your children. I'm seeing what it means to hang in there with your kids, even when you just want to give up. I've watched parents here sob for their children and say, no one's going to take my child away from you, God. I'm claiming them for you. I've sat in those conversations. I've prayed them myself. And I want to say that we want to be a church that encourages parents. If you see a parent doing it tough, a grandparent doing it hard, come alongside, encourage one another, pray for each other, pray for each other's kids, because we need all the help we can get. It's not easy raising kids today in this 21st century. It is rough. The challenges that our young people are facing are absolutely shocking. Honestly, they bring you to your knees most of the time. But I am in awe of the parents and the grandparents of this church. I want to say to you guys, keep going. Keep doing your best and don't give up. Don't abdicate your responsibility as parents, even when it seems just ridiculously hard. Because what you don't do matters. So do what you can while you can. I want to encourage the band to move up with me this morning. I want to invite you to have a response time with me today. Perhaps as a parent, there's something you might have been challenged with. Maybe some of you are feeling that some decisions you've made haven't been good. Or perhaps you wish you'd done something differently. I wish I'd done things differently. But guess what? It's a fresh day. Our God is a God of new beginnings. We get to wipe the slate clean and we say, God, I might have done a couple of things wrong. Please help me fine-tune. Move into the future. Oh, how awesome is that? So if that's been your experience or that's what you're feeling today, embrace the future. Put your flag in the sand and say, God, today I want to be more intentional in discipling my children. Today, I want to not walk away from those tough conversations I need to have with my kids. I want to discipline them. And God, today I'm going to put you first in everything I do. Not my kids and their needs, God first, and then everything will fall into place from that. So there might be some of you that want to come forward, maybe husbands and wives, parents, single parents, step families, I don't care. Anyone that wants to pray for kids and for parents is awesome. And I want to say, that's you today. I want you to come forward. And I want other families or parents to come and surround you and to pray for you. And I don't care if you're not a parent. I'd love to see some children in this church come and pray for their parents as well or other people. Let's encourage one another so that we can be the kind of parents who do what we can while we can, because what you don't do matters. We're also going to bring our kids in as well from NBC Kids and Mini Miners, because we want them to be part of this. How awesome is it to see parents praying? What would it mean for some of these kids to see their parents praying together? So I'm going to leave this open. So we're going to bring our kids in, and I want to encourage anyone, hop out of your seats, come and pray with those who are already here, pray with those who need your prayers today.